Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome. Wonderful to be in your company again. It seems like some time since I sat in the seat and was in the studio, and it's wonderful to be back. Apologies for missing out on the last couple of sessions, but here we are, Judaism 101.9. It's Rabbi Michael Katz here with you for the next 45 minutes or so, and to talk about and think about some things. As we always say, Judaism 101.9 is about the basics, about the things that you may know, you may have known, you may have forgotten, you may never have known, but just to keep it kind of in simple terms about what we should do, what we should be thinking, and what these days and these times represent for us. And I'm not only talking about political times or geopolitical times or things that are going on that you read about in the news and so on, but what is this period of time about for us as Jews in general? The days of Shvat, these special days that we're looking forward to in the coming week, what are they really all about, and what kind of character do they carry with themselves, with them, that we can integrate and inculcate into our daily lives, taking the messages of these deep and profound and meaningful things that have happened in our history, putting them into perspective, taking them to heart, acting upon them, doing something about them. I'd like to begin actually in a different place today. While we often start with going through the week, I see that it is something that's becoming more and more popular, looking at the week ahead or the week behind, but let's look forward. Let's rather look at things that are going to be happening from today, tomorrow, and then some up until our next Wednesday session. But to begin with, let's perhaps take a brief view, a brief look at the beginning of a tractate in the Talmud that almost every Jew has some kind of an affiliation or an affinity with. And that's a tractate that is known as Pirkei Avot, always translated as the Ethics or the Chapters of Our Fathers. Chapters of Our Fathers, Ethics of Our Fathers. It is an unusual tractate of Talmud in that there is no what is known as Gemara, there is no formulation, debate, etc. It is a series of six chapters of just that, really, ethics, behavioral tactics, things that our sages felt were important for us all to know and for us all to think about and govern our lives according to those thoughts. Yes, a lot of it is about Torah learning. A lot of it is about the need for the performance of mitzvot. But really what the overall picture of it is about is how to be the perfect Jewish mensch, how to behave correctly, how to act properly. And it begins in a very unusual kind of a way, because we all know that Mishnah means a teaching. It is not just a segment of Jewish law, which was labeled as a Mishnah and kind of then stating that was law number one, prayer number two, and so on, of a document, perhaps a constitution, and so on. This was, Mishnah means a teaching. Every word of the Mishnah was really, really not just hand-picked, but it was thought through and it was decided upon by great minds who knew that they were embedding, they were planting for perpetuity, messages that had to be carried out by those who were going to be learning them and reading them centuries from when they wrote it, how it needed to remain relevant, how it needed to be exact in what it was trying to convey and what it was trying to say. And therefore, while sometimes they look cryptic and seem to be a little bit open to all sorts of interpretation, they were really, really chosen words and significantly chosen right from the very get-go, right from the beginning. So it seems strange when we start off with this tractate that it begins, and by the way, this is something you can find, maybe that's another reason why it's so popular and why people think about it a lot, is because it's found in every siddur. Every good siddur, your prayer book, has the tractate of Pirkei Avot usually printed in it, because there is a custom that from the Shabbat after Pesach, that throughout the Sfira period, and many people carry on all the way up until Rosh Hashanah, that each year on a Shabbat afternoon, so it's kind of printed usually near the afternoon service of Shabbat Mincha, that a chapter, or sometimes two chapters where we need to catch up, are learnt or said at Mincha time, at the afternoon prayer, on a Saturday afternoon, on a Shabbat afternoon. And how does it all begin? It begins with a statement which seems to be telling us something historic. We're going through the history. Now, remember, being Jewish, and properly Jewish, means an acceptance of the fact that God gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai, not just the Ten Commandments, not just what Moshe Rabbeinu, what Moses brought down in written form, but he also gave us the oral law. He gave us all of the laws that would ever be invented. About those laws were actually given on Mount Sinai. A lot of it was supposed to remain in the oral form, but due to persecutions, exiles, distances between communities and so on, it was decided over a period of time that in various centers these things needed to be recorded, written down, and Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, was just one of them. And here we have an opening statement which kind of gives a history of the hand down from generation to generation of this segment of Jewish law, the oral tradition, the Mesorah, the tradition of Judaism, that it was handed down from one generation to the next. And how was this done? So it says right at the beginning of Pirkei Avot, it says, Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Moses received the Torah from Sinai. Umesorah liYeshua, he handed it down to Joshua. VYeshua liZakenim, Joshua gave it to the elders. UZakenim liNeviim, the elders gave it to the prophets. UNeviim laAnshei Knesset haGedolah, the Neviim handed it to the men of the great assembly. And then we go on to the fact that Haim Amru Shlosha Dvarim, that they said three things and a teaching of them. But I would like to focus on this kind of introductory, this preamble, this introduction to Pirkei Avot, to the Ethics of Our Fathers, which is so important in the way that we understand the way that Torah works, the way that Judaism works, and that is that everything is actually a teaching. We are not just stating here a preamble to the Ethics of Our Fathers. We are not here just saying, okay, let's just, before we get to these facts, let's just tell you where they came from, that it was from Moses to Joshua, from Joshua to the elders, from the elders to the prophets, from the prophets to the men of the great assembly. It's not just that. It actually is, each word has within them, within those words, profound and important teachings. So we start off with Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Moses received the Torah in its entirety from Sinai. Now, if you think about it, that's factually incorrect. Moshe kibel Torah al Sinai, or b'Sinai, Moses received the Torah from Sinai, is not the fact. Misinai, not correct. He didn't receive the Torah from Sinai, he received the Torah from God on Mount Sinai, at Sinai. That would have been the better description. So we're led to a hint at the fact that this is teaching us a lot more than just Moshe and Sinai. What it's teaching us is that Moses received the Torah from Sinai. Sinai was a mood. Sinai was an environment. Sinai was not just the name of that mountaintop. Sinai was reflecting what that mountain represented. A humble mountain, a place of humility. It wasn't the best known mountain. In fact, we're told that if you go to that realm and that region and they tell you this is Mount Sinai, you don't believe them. Why? Because nobody actually knows which is Mount Sinai. So Mount Sinai was the humblest mountain. It wasn't the biggest, it wasn't the greatest, it wasn't the most beautiful, it wasn't the most wonderful. But we see that from Moshe as well. Moshe, the most humble man who ever lived. Greatest leader, and yet humility. And so we come to the first character trait that a person has to have and that we expect from leadership, humility. Moses received the Torah from Sinai as a statement about the most humble man receiving the Torah from the most humble atmosphere and the most humble attitude that Sinai represented. That was what that statement actually means. And this is the way that we need to start unpacking and thinking about things in our lives and things in Torah per se. And these great and wonderful teachings, what are we saying? The first thing that a Jew has to know, you want access to the Torah, you want to learn the Torah, you want to be a Torah Jew, you want to be a Jew per se, first qualification, and especially if you want to be a leader, first qualification is humility, humbleness. This is absolutely essential.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Welcome back. So you're on Judaism 101.9 with Rabbi Michael Katz, and here we are thinking about and talking about the first chapter in Pirkei Avot, in the ethics of our fathers, and the relevance that it has for our behaviors and for leadership. Number one is, we said, humility, humbleness. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai means Moses received the Torah from Sinai. Moses, the most humble man from Sinai, the most humble mountain. It's all about humility. You want to be a Jewish leader. You want to be a leader in your own life. You want to be a leader in your community. You want to be God's kind of a leader on earth, as an example of what a Jew should be. Humility. Humbleness, humility, point one. Point two, Moshe, Moses, handed this to Joshua, to Yeshua. Who was Joshua? Joshua was, of course, the successor of Moshe, who led the Jewish people into Israel, while Moses was destined to remain in the desert with his people. Joshua, Yeshua led the new generation into Israel. Yeshua. But what was he known for? Joshua was known to be the most absolute follower of his master, of Moshe, of Moses. He did whatever it was that Moshe wanted from him. Even, yes, when the whole world seemed to be up and against everything that he stood for, with the story of the spies, it was Joshua, Yeshua, who was empowered by Moshe, of course, but also by God himself and also by him himself, to absolutely stand up for what was right, what was correct, not be swayed by popular opinion, not to be swayed by what everybody was saying, by what the public was saying. This was Joshua, the absolute example of being a servant, a chassid, a follower of his master, of Moshe. This was Joshua. So the second qualification, actually, that we need, not just as individuals, but actually as leaders, is to be followers of God, followers of Moshe, followers of the Torah. When we have that right, we can then become leaders in our own right. Now, Yeshua handed it to the Zakenim. Who were the Zakenim? The Zakenim were the elders of the Jewish people, the elders of the community. They were a group of elders. Now, in a modern world, when you hear the name elders, you think of old, decrepit, old-fashioned, not relevant. And, you know, we can easily write them off in our minds because they're not up with the modern world. And Torah teaches us, think again. We need our elders. We need older people. We need experience. We need the wise counsel of those who have been there and done that. We need to value our history. Remember, history repeats itself, and sometimes it repeats itself in an ugly way. Why? Because we didn't learn the lessons. We need the people who can point out, mark those important lessons and tell us where we could go wrong and what we need to think about and do. And let's not be accused of writing people off too easily or not having a history. This is Zakenim and what they represent. And then perhaps we could swing that around and say Zakenim to Nevi'im. The Zakenim gave it to the prophets. Now, what is a prophet? We often think about a prophet as being someone who can tell the future, someone who can look into the future. Well, the prophets of old, of Torah, were not like that. They weren't prophets who predicted the future. They're not going to tell us on this and this date, this and this is going to happen. That's not Jewish prophecy. The idea of prophecy is clearly taking words of Torah. If you will keep to God's law, good things will happen. If you desecrate it, if you go against it, well, bad things are going to happen. That kind of a message was not necessarily predictive in the usual way of predicting the future, but it certainly had a view always for what is going to happen. If your behaviors will be bad, God is going to bring about destruction. If you're going to divorce God, so to speak, God forbid, he is going to not be that happy with you and he's going to take it out on you. So just remember that this is the way of how you got to plan your life, how you got to think of the future. So while we've got to have a history, we can't live in the past. We've got to live for a future. We've got to have a future-looking way about us, and we've got to remember what the Nevi'im, what the prophets would have told us and would have taught us. And then the Nevi'im, they gave it over to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. They gave it to the men of the Great Assembly, and the men of the Great Assembly were the ones who actually kind of canonized. They put things into its format. They formatted our prayers. They formatted our grace after meals, our Haggadah. And so when the men of the Great Assembly did a lot of the formatting of Judaism, we can't live Judaism and we can't be leaders unless we've got a plan, unless it's properly structured, and unless our Judaism is structured. We can't say, well, you know what, I'll pray when I feel like it. No, there is a structure that we need to follow. So we need, number one, the humility. Number two, servile mentality. Number three, the idea of having a history. Number four, the idea of having a future. And number five, the idea of a structure within which this all functions. Now, why this is so relevant is because over this weekend and in the next few days, we are going to be thinking a lot about leadership, and we'll explain why. But let's just begin by telling you that tomorrow, the 8th of Shvat, is actually the end of the time of the Zakenim. Now, there were a lot of elders who were contemporaries of Joshua and outlived him. But the last of them passed away in the year 2533 after creation on the 8th of Shvat. So that's tomorrow. Tomorrow, the 8th of Shvat, marks really the end of the elders. Remember, we mentioned them there. Moses from Sinai. Moses handed it over to Joshua. Joshua to the elders. Those elders, many of whom outlived Yeshua, outlived Joshua, passed away in the year 1228 before the Common Era. That's a long time ago, but they passed away. It actually became a fast day in ancient times because this was the end of the era of the elders. And they were part, of course, of the chain of Torah transmission, as we have enumerated, as we've spoken about above. So tomorrow is a time when we're thinking back to this time of leadership and the role that the elders played. Now, if we just move a little bit further forward and we think about what is Shabbat all about, this coming Shabbat is Yud Shvat. It is the 10th day in the month of Shvat. Yes, today is the 7th of Shvat, so tomorrow the 8th, Friday the 9th. When we come to Shabbat, it is the 10th of Shvat. Yud Shvat, the 10th of Shvat, is a huge date in the Chabad Hasidic calendar. It marks so many important things. Number one, the passing of Rebbetzin Rivka. Rebbetzin Rivka, who was born in Lubavitch in 1833. Her maternal grandfather was Rabbi Dov Ber, the second Rebbe of Chabad Lubavitch. And in 1849, she married her first cousin, Rabbi Shmuel, who later became the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, she passed away in 1914 on Yud Shvat, on the 10th of Shvat. But it was a day that also then became the Yortzeit of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. He passed away in New York on Shabbat, on Shabbos morning, the 10th of Shvat, in the year 5710, which is 1950. And it was at that time that the Hasidim began to campaign after his passing for the Lubavitcher Rebbe, our Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the son-in-law of the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Schneerson, to become the Rebbe. And in fact, it was only on Yud Shvat, on this date 1 year later, on the first Yortzeit of his father-in-law, that he really assumed the leadership. And he then delivered a Hasidic discourse entitled Bosi Lagani, I Came Into My Garden, which was signifying his formal acceptance of the leadership of the Chabad Lubavitch movement. So now, if we think about all of this in terms of this week and in terms of the idea here of not only these great people whose energies we live with and we think about at this time, whether it was Rebbetzin Rivka, whether it is the elders, whether it was the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, was the Rebbe himself. We think about the power that they gave us in the messages that they delivered, that they instructed us in. And in that famous Maimer that we mentioned, that Hasidic discourse, there was really a map, a plan. While it is in great Hasidic language, so to speak, it is actually a directive for how we are supposed to live our lives, what our purpose is on earth, what we're doing here, not only as a leader who is proclaiming here what his leadership was all about, but really proclaiming what we as Jews need to do and what each and every one of us needs to do in this world in order to bring about the Geula, in order to bring about the coming of Mashiach. Yes, of course, living up to what the Torah wants from us. Yes, of course, doing Hashem's beckoning, doing the mitzvot that he asks us to do, doing all of those deeds, those actions. But it's about setting up a world with this image of the garden, a garden of greatness, a garden and garden of wonderful things, of kindness, of goodness, things that can be literally surrounding us, plucked from the trees, growing in the wind, blowing in the wind, all over the place, everything, that to create this kind of an atmosphere, as is known in common language today, a vibe of of goodness, a vibe of kindness, and so on, to make this place, this world, ready for the coming of Mashiach. And of course, that was the way that the Rebbe positioned himself and looked at it. But we have to think back, I think, to what the Rebbe was really trying to accomplish throughout his tenure as the leader of Chabad, and what he garnered, what he learned, what he taught in the name of his father-in-law. And the first and foremost was that humility. I don't think the Rebbe ever referred to himself as the Rebbe, as the leader. He continually reminded everybody that his father-in-law was the leader. He was a memalei mokum. He was just filling his seat, just filling his place. He would need to get his directives from the teachings of his father-in-law. He would need to get the directives, the teachings from the previous Rebbe. He viewed himself as taking those instructions and as just being a kind of a conduit to transmit them. And of course, we know the greatness of the Rebbe's mind, and we know the greatness of everything that he did and everything that he was able to do and accomplish on behalf of Jews everywhere. But the Rebbe himself had that incredible Moshe Sinai kind of a humility, a humbleness. And it's not a weakness, God forbid. It is the greatest strength, and I think that this is what Pirkei Avot is trying to teach us. Humility. While we look at leaders today and we think that they need to be loud and proud and outspoken, and they need to be full of themselves, and they need to be a little bit arrogant in order to be able to push their weight around and get anywhere, Torah tells us no. The first qualification for a Jewish leader has to be humility. We've got to take a piece of Moshe Rabbeinu, and dare I say, from the Rebbe's and the Rebbe himself, in how to be an effective leader, showing that incredible humility, that incredible humbleness, which he communicated to each and every one of us.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Welcome back. Yes, Rabbi Michael Katz here with you on Judaism 101.9. It's great to be in your company. We're talking about the Rebbes of Chabad, the handover, so to speak, of the helm of Chabad leadership, which took place on Yud Shvat, on the 10th day of Shvat in 1951. And this year, of course, we're celebrating, commemorating 75 years since that happened. The Rebbe was always into the idea of a special significant number of years, a 30th anniversary, a 50th anniversary, and so on, especially when it came to these special and significant dates. And I think that what the Rebbe wanted us to understand about these dates was that they should empower us with what the Rebbes stood for. And we need to think about what he always spoke about, what his father-in-law, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, stood for, which was an absolute staunch and reticent kind of a standing up for what was right and correct in Judaism, unflinching on things of Torah and mitzvot, and making them reachable and palatable and acceptable and doable for millions of people around the world. If we think about what the previous Rebbe started and what the Rebbe carried on about spreading Judaism all over the world, the Rebbe was very, very careful in the way that he went about it and his choice of words. While people used to speak about those who were distant, the Rebbe never accepted that there are some people who are distant. No, we have a connection, and an absolute connection to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to God, to our, to everything about Torah and Mitzvot, through our neshama, through our souls. To say we're distant, we're not distant. So therefore, the idea of bringing people closer who are distant was not really part of the Rebbe's vocabulary. The idea was rather to reach them and to reach them on a level that they could understand, and to bring them back and to get them involved and to get them doing what we know to be what people should be doing. This was kind of the Rebbe's attitude, never disparaging and never looking down on anybody, but always with that first transmitted idea of humility, of humbleness, humbleness in a humble way, remembering that everybody's important, remembering that everybody has and needs to have the courtesy and the respect of their time, of their views, of their energy, and so on. But to stand for what you've got to stand for, to be proud of what you are, and to enable others to see how great it is to be Jewish, how great it is to be Torah observant, how great it is to study the Torah, to do the mitzvot, and to become part of that. This was how the Rebbe saw it, to how we needed to fix up this garden, to make the garden prepared, to make it all ready for the coming of Mashiach. This was what we all needed to put our heads to and we needed to do. And so the Rebbe also taught us how to be not only followers, but like Joshua, who was the perfect follower, he had to become a leader. You can't stay a follower, and you can't always only be a follower. It was the famous late Rabbi Jonathan Sacks of blessed memory who coined the phrase about the Rebbe. He said the Rebbe never made followers, he made leaders. But you have to be, in a sense, a follower in order to be a leader. You have to have something that you look up to and something that you follow and something that you have from your leadership to be able to transmit as a leader. This was the way the Rebbe saw it, and this is what the Rebbe created in the leaders that he created of each and every one of us in our path through life going forward, not only from Joshua, but then Zakenim. The Rebbe dwelt often and a lot on the idea of the history. A Zaken, a person who has Zeshe Kana Chochma, we're told, is a Zaken, someone who has acquired knowledge. We've got to learn from the knowledgeable. We've got to learn from those who have wisdom, and it's the wisdom that is that comes about not only through the books that we study, but it comes about through the experience and through the practicalities of it all. And then, of course, having a vision for the future. There were very few people that certainly I've ever come across who had such an incredible vision for the future and realized the necessity of the structure of Judaism in order for it all to function correctly. And so what an appropriate analysis, actually, if we think about it, of what leadership is all about, and how Yud Shvat, this coming up day of that kind of a transmission of the center of leadership in Chabad, that took place in 75 years ago, how relevant this kind of teaching was and is to each and every one of us every single day. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
So we've been talking about leadership and the idea of being a leader in your own right and the qualifications for leadership as transmitted to us by great sages, by great teachers. We need to remember that a primary qualification for Jewish leadership is humility. We can never be arrogant, never think we know it all, and never, I think, come into power or into a position of leadership in any realm by disparaging, by putting down the ones who were there before, those who led before us. It's not really the Jewish way. The Jewish way is rather to say, how can we take the messages that they had, embroider upon them, look at them and take them as great and wonderful and lift our game in order to not only match that but to improve upon it and to carry out what our founding fathers, what our great people before us actually saw and what they transmitted to us. And by so doing, we will become great leaders in our own right, leaders in our families, leaders in our communities, and most importantly, I think, leaders in our own lives. We also need to be leaders of putting forward the best of us, of each and every one of us, in what we project and how we lead ourselves as members of this wonderful people called Am Yisrael. So please God, in the coming days, we will see great strides of leadership in each and every one of us, and hopefully the ultimate of coming into that garden and having the world all ready and prepared for the ultimate leadership, the leadership of Mashiach Tzidkenu, of the righteous Redeemer who will take us out of this Golus, out of this exile, and lead us to a kind of a an environment and a time of Mashiach, when there'll be peace on earth, where no longer will we have to wake up and wish we didn't, where no longer will we have the darkness that seems to sometimes have crept in into all corners of this world, but that we will see Geula Shlema and Amitit. We will see the absolute, complete redemption. We hope and we pray for that. So I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, and look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week on another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.